You're listening to a podcast from 702.
Clock. Now, yesterday I said to you on the show that I wanted for myself to just read that High Court judgment again. And it's a High Court judgment that legal experts as well as practicing lawyers disagree about, the one that declared the regulations to be invalid and inconsistent with aspects of existing statutes, as well as not properly applying the rationality test as well as the limitations clause. Well, I've asked Professor Pierre de Vos, who is a constitutional law expert, as well as the author of the excellent and very popular blog, constitutionallyspeaking.co.za, to join us for 5 to 10 minutes. He has read the judgment very closely, and he's got a perspective. I certainly on this one do not have much clarity for myself. Prof, thank you so much for coming on the show. Much appreciated.
Thank you, CBS.
Let's take it step by step. Firstly, practically, just so that people can understand what they can't and can do, before we analyze the merits of the court's reasoning and what a rationality test is and whether it was applied properly, when the court says that the order is suspended, what does that mean practically for someone who's listening to us right now?
Practically, that means that the regulations are in place and they need, if you don't obey them and there's a criminal sanction on a prohibition and you breach that, then you are liable. So you are, everything is still in place. Nothing practically has changed from the day before the judgment was handed out.
When courts do that, why do they do so?
So the courts often do that. It is usually a kind of respect for the separation of powers. So with one reason, and so they send it back to either the legislature, in this case the executive, to fix the problem, because the court will say, we are not, as the judiciary, cannot fix this. Or, in this case, also perhaps to prevent disruption by declaring something invalid. So they suspend the order of invalidity so that there would not be large-scale disruption if the law suddenly doesn't exist anymore.
There are two parts to your analysis, Pierre. The one is puzzling through what the right standard is by which to judge a lockdown regulation and then assessing whether the court accurately applies that standard. Let's divide our own discussion into those two parts. What is the standard for deciding whether or not a particular regulation is rational? What does rationality in law mean?
Okay, so there are actually two different legal tests. The one is rationality, and that says that it's a low standard. It's not a standard that says that the regulation should be wise or the best possible one. It is just that there must be some kind of rational link between the regulation and the purpose for which the regulation was made. In this case, the purpose is the purpose of the declaration of national disaster, saving lives, suppressing the spread of the COVID-19. So you ask, well, if you look at this regulation, is there some link between what the regulation says and this ultimate goal? In my piece, I gave the example of what would not be rational. That is, if a regulation said you're not allowed to dance or play loud music in your flat, that is not rationally related to suppressing COVID or saving lives, because dancing is not going to, in your own flat, is not going to spread the virus.
Okay, and that is quite a low bar. So like you say, the important point is it's not about the wisdom. If there are, for argument's sake, four ways to get me to do something, the court is not interested in which is the best. If all four are means to achieve that outcome, all four would be rational ways of doing so, regardless which one might be the best. The question of which one is the best is a separate question, right?
Yes, that is correct. It's a little bit more complicated, though, because there's also a second test that regulation must comply with, and that is they have to be compliant with the Bill of Rights. So if any of the regulations limit a right, then the test is more of a reasonable test, because you have to ask whether the limitation is reasonable and justifiable in terms of the limitation clause, and then it's more of a balancing of interest. You ask how serious is the infringement of the right, how important is the purpose, is there another way of achieving it that is going to limit your rights less drastically, that, so if the regulation infringes a right, the bar is slightly higher than for the rationality test.
Is that where things become murky? So, for example, if your right to move freely, which ordinarily is an important part of a democracy, or your right to trade, which also is an important right in a democracy, gets limited, then we are now moving from the lower bar of rationality to applying the limitations clause.
Yes, that is correct. So, there's a distinction. There's an important distinction between the two. Obviously, for obvious reasons, because although all exercise of public power must be rational, as soon as you start interfering in rights, then the courts will have a much more closer look, because then the consequences from a human rights perspective is much more severe.
Let's go there then next, because here you say until this point, more or less, the court has accurately described the content of the rationality test. But after that, in your opinion, it goes pear-shaped.
Yes, it does actually. And there are a few reasons for this, which I will mention a few. The first one is that if a court wants to declare invalid a regulation, then it has to look at that specific regulation and has to ask, is there a link between the regulation and the purpose of declaring the disaster? What the court did, however, it sort of cherry-picked some of the regulations, which itself was more absurd or irrational. It discussed in some ways the rationality, and then it said, well, because of this, all the regulations, with a few exceptions, are actually irrational and invalid, but without discussing each one of the regulations separately and measuring that against the rationality test. So the order was far too sweeping. Even if you agree with the way that the court applied the rationality test, which I don't, it was far too sweeping and broad. That's you can't do it like that. And then, of course, the second problem is that the court, when it applied the rationality test, really went to the question of, is this the best possible regulation? It did not really keep in mind what is the ultimate purpose of the disaster declaration, and then ask, well, is there a link here? It just says, well, this regulation is absurd. For example, hairdressers, the court said, the ban on hairdressers is absurd because people are going to lose money and some of them might be poor. But that's not the test. The test is there a bigger threat to get the coronavirus from a hairdresser than from somebody working separate and alone in office? And the answer is yes. So it is probably rational, well, almost certainly rational for that regulation to be in place.
Yeah, because the aim was not to make sure that moms don't suffer in terms of how much money they have. That's a very important human rights issue. But the aim is narrow, flattening the curve.
Yes, exactly. It would be different if you use the second test, the Bill of Rights limitation test, then the balancing of interest comes in, and then there might be an argument that the balance was struck wrongly, that it was not proportionate, taking account of the way it infringes on people's rights to make a living and to survive and to eat. But the court didn't really apply that test. It just said rationality and limitation analysis is basically the same.
Yeah, that seems to me deeply problematic. A second last question, Pierre. Given also that this case was being analyzed as we were moving to lockdown level 3 and those regulations and the details were not quite promulgated as yet, isn't the other problem for the judge that the entire case was really moot, surely?
Yes, so this is an odd thing, because in the judgment, the court said that they were not given the new regulations, which was actually promulgated, I think, on the day that the hearing happened. But it sort of took judicial notice of those regulations and then also declared them invalid, and also declared invalid the regulations that had already been passed. That is not completely moot, though, because many actions were taken in terms of level 4 regulations.
Sure.
And so if it is invalid, that means that anybody who got a fine or whatever, that fine is now not legally valid and should be scrapped, because if the regulations are invalid and you don't prevent the invalidation being retroactively applicable, then those things, it's as if they never were passed and there was never a law and then there were no legal consequences.
Last question. I wonder where this case will go from here, because some of the bad arguments that the judge made for conclusions that can be sustained with better arguments, I wonder whether those can be brought back to court. For example, on the question of a hairstylist, I'm busy putting together a radio program about the beauty industry and how it's been impacted. And it's amazing to me how one after the other, as I speak to barbers, to hairstylers, women in charge of nail salon bars that they've been running forever, they've got good empirical responses to people who think that that their places are not safe places. They don't want sympathy because, you know, they are single moms. They've got an answer to the public health question, for example. So it also makes me think that with better litigation, better arguments for the same conclusions could have been brought to court. But nevertheless, in general, Pierre, how do you see this case going from here in terms of making its way through the system?
Yes, so the problem for both sides in this case is that it was really badly litigated.
Yeah.
Both from the side of the applicants and the respondents didn't really cover themselves in glory. And then to fix this on appeal is very difficult because now it's all been pleaded. But it's probably going to be appealed. And given the fact that this kind of evidence that you speak has not been placed before the court, even if there are excellent scientific arguments to be made, they're not before the court, so the appeal will probably be overturning the judgment or most of the judgment.
Love your work, Pierre. Thank you as always for your generosity on my show. I really appreciate it.
Okay, it's a pleasure. Have a nice day.
Cheers. That's UCT Professor Pierre DeVos. Go have a look at his blog entry, constitutionallyspeaking.co.za.